A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. At that time Jesus went through the cornfields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry, and they began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. When the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath." He said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence, which it was not lawful for him or his companions to eat, but only for the priests. Or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath the priests in the temple break the Sabbath and yet are guiltless? I tell you, something greater than the temple is here. But if you had known what this means, 'I desire mercy and not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." The Gospel of the Lord. Jews refer to the first five books of the Bible as Torah, or the Law. It's true that four of those five books do largely consist of those instructions and law codes that form the basis of Jewish existence to this day. But there are also a lot of stories in the Torah that do not obviously have a legal purpose. The story of creation, the stories of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, of Joseph and his brothers, and, as we hear today, the story which tells how God delivered his people from bondage in Egypt. Why should all this be called law as well? We tend to think of laws quite abstractly, as a set of rules to determine right or wrong, permitted or forbidden behaviour. Imagined this way, law marks out the boundaries of acceptability. We live within the law. In fact, however, law isn't so all-encompassing, and if it were, we could hardly change it. Law is made for a purpose. The right and wrong depend on the kind of people and the kind of activity that a law governs. The law by which God institutes the Passover commemoration for the Jewish people only makes sense, is only right, for the Jewish people, whom God saved, and the purpose it serves is to commemorate God's saving work. When we consider the instructions God gives the people for leaving Egypt, we find that they're quite practical. He tells them to be ready-dressed, and to have a meal that can be hastily eaten so that they can make a quick getaway. The laws here are about making sure that Israel can escape. More generally, we can say that the Torah, or the law of the Old Testament, is given to be an expression of God's special relationship to Israel. But that special relationship can only be understood if we know its history. The stories of the first five books of the Bible, therefore, are an essential part of the law, because without them, we could not understand the point of the laws. Because laws always serve a particular purpose and only make sense in a particular context, there are some cases where written laws can be rightly suspended. A classic example that gets given in the Catholic tradition is the law against stealing. If someone really cannot find food to feed himself or his family, then he can rightly take food from someone else who has enough to spare. After all, private property is a human-made institution. In the beginning, all things simply belonged to Adam and Eve, humanity in common. Life is given by God, and when life is under threat, the preservation of this first and most basic gift of God must take precedence over respect for what's mine and what's yours. Theologians like St. Thomas Aquinas even identify a special virtue for knowing when and how to suspend the law in a given case. They call it epieikia, or equity. The word most basically means being reasonable. In other words, thinking about the way we apply laws rather than following them blindly. Jesus today reminds the Pharisees about this principle. The example of David and the showbread is in fact very similar to the example I just gave about stealing. Life itself is God-given and sacred, with a sanctity that is prior to any more particular divisions of holy and profane, priest and laity. So it was absolutely right for the priest to offer David and his men even the bread that was reserved for the priests. Again, the Sabbath law is given, we read in Exodus, so that God's act of creating, which was consecrated by the seventh day rest, may be echoed in the life of the people of Israel. But the same purpose was served by the whole gamut of rituals that were carried on in the temple. And so the fact that the temple priests, in some sense, work on the Sabbath does not exclude them from being in tune with God's creative act like the rest of the people. They too fulfill the purpose of the Sabbath. What's really striking about our gospel passage is not this reminder of epiaikia. The Pharisees and certainly later rabbis were aware of that principle in different forms. Now, what's really exciting, extraordinary, is what Jesus hints about the story that makes sense of the law. Now here, I tell you, is something greater than the temple. Jesus is talking about the arrival of a new stage in Israel's history, life, and worship. All along, the law, he suggests, had been the expression of God's mercy to Israel, rather than about anything that Israel could give to God. And now, that mercy of God has come to fruit. Because here we have not just the temple, but the very one who is master of the temple and the Sabbath. Master of the law, master of the creation, the King of the universe.